Welcome, welcome, welcome to After the Bell. I am still Corey Graves, and welcome to the void. You know, that week between Christmas and New Year's that nobody accomplishes absolutely anything. Well, we here at ATB, we got you covered. Joining us, as always, Kevin Patrick, KP. How was your holiday?
What's the good word, man? This void you speak of is a beautiful thing. I'm having a wonderful Christmas here with loved ones. How about you?
I am living it up in Las Vegas as actually, by the time people are listening to this, I'm recovering from Las Vegas. But we were kind enough.
And you're a very rich man.
I hope I'm rich by now. We have the foresight to put this together for everybody so that you are not without the greatest sports entertainment podcast this week.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to keep you connected and moving together as one.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Listen, we talked last week a lot about our favorite matches and moments of 2022. Great interview with Roxanne Perez. This week, we're going to play some of our favorite interviews that have taken place on After the Bell. And there's no denying, KP, 2022 was the year of the bloodline. From the head of the table, Roman Reigns, on down to the Usos, who now, in December of 2022, own the distinction of being the longest reigning tag team champions in WWE history. And that was a goal that was on their mind when they joined the show back in May to talk tag team titles, tag team greatness, and all things bloodline. You guys literally grew up in this business, and we talk about the bloodline, and to the average WWE fan, the bloodline, yes, we know it's based in truth. We know you guys are genuinely related, but I don't think a lot of our audience, our fan base, knows how truly deep the bloodline runs. Aside from a video package here or there and a quick acknowledgement of, oh, this family member, we had our producers put together, actually track down a family tree for your family.
7 pages long.
I don't know
by
how accurate it is, so I'm gonna test you guys. I'm gonna ask
you. Yeah,
about
let
this.
Me know. It might be a damn family forest round.
It's crazy. It's absolutely unbelievable. Just all the recognizable names in here. Half of them I cannot pronounce with all due respect. The higher up the tree, the harder time I have pronouncing any of it. But I mean, obviously, your guy's father, Rikishi. And you know, the connection that you've got. Going back earlier in his career, you got Samu, which Samu was my first introduction to your family here in Pittsburgh. When I broke into the business, Sammy was kind of the elder statesman. And yes. I was telling Vic the story. I was probably 15, 16 years old. I just broke into the business. I was like a referee, just trying to get trained, things like that. And I remember being in this bar that all the boys used to hang out at after the shows. And Sammy's a pool shark. Right? Like
They all are.
Okay. Yeah, all so that's are. A family yeah. trait. Okay.
Yeah.
And I remember I was leaned over the pool table and I took my shot and I stood up and Sammy was behind me and he put his hands on my shoulders and he's like, oh, you're a good kid. You're a good kid. Next thing I know, he was catching me because he put me to sleep right in the bar in front of everybody.
Hey, sorry about that, man.
Picked me back up. But it was like, all right, you're all right. And I had a laugh once I remembered where the hell I was. But that was my first introduction to your family. You got so obviously you got Damn. Samu, you got Fatu. You've got the Wild Samoans, sort of the patriarchs of all this.
Yeah.
It just keeps splintering. You guys have another brother that just entered the fold in NXT. Yeah. Obviously. And then I looked because my curiosity has always been where Rock ties into all this.
Yeah.
And it's way high up the tree, way up in the family tree. Back to the High Chief, Peter Maivia.
High Chief, yep.
And there's basically two main arteries. And one is the Rock side and one is everything on Hawaii. And obviously, Rosie, Usa's brother.
Yep.
Sadly, no longer with us.
Yep.
Eki, Umaga.
Yep.
Who I didn't realize that Umaga was Kishi's brother.
Get out of here, dog.
I didn't know that. I think it's just the age difference. I knew he was related, but I didn't realize they were brothers. I thought there was a cousins. Everybody's your cousin. Let's be honest. I'm related to you somehow. But looking through this, talk to me about this a little bit more. I mean, you guys, your journey's been covered. You got the 24s or the day one, all the documentaries about your guys' life and career. But shed a little bit more light on this bloodline, man, and how rich this history is and what it means to this business.
I'll tell you this, man. When we got together, we knew the name was Bloodline. Like, we knew it just, we knew it was going to be Bloodline, regardless, whatever they say. Whatever, there's a name you guys need to come up with. Bloodline, dog. Like, what you mean? Like,
what a dope name, though, right?
The name's fantastic. Dope. It's excellent. Yeah.
Bloodline. Hey, man, but check this out, Corey. I was sitting there watching my little nephew one day, man. He had these action figures, man. He had my dad, Yoko, Umaga. He had the Wild Samoans. He had the Rock. He had us, Roman. And I'm just sitting there, and he's just got them propped up. He's just playing. But I walk by and I'm just like, I look how many of us that he just had. I'm just like, damn, that's like, it dawned on me.
Kind of hard to believe. Yeah. You know what I mean? Talk about like a truly family business. You got generations. I mean, Randy Orton, third generation. Yeah. Your whole family are generations deep in this game. As I'm looking down the list, like I said, you named Yoko. I missed the name Yokozuna, an all-time great. Just another on the list of, incredible athletes. Reno, Black Pearl, I got to know him real well working with your dad over in Europe. Your dad gave me one of my first breaks before WWE, working over in, doing tours in Europe. And I'd wrestled your dad two or three times by the time I met you guys.
Man, that's cool.
I remember getting to FCW, and I was like, man, what a weird connection to your family. You guys have been like this recurring thread in my career. And it's such a broad reach. You guys have, cousins. Let me look at this here.
Jacob Fatu. Yeah, they're killing it.
Tonga Kid, whatever. He had a run in WWE.
TK all day.
It's so wild. And obviously, I mean, you guys are both fathers there's probably another generation already ready at this point.
Hey, Corey, that's the thing. We ain't got no idea how many cousins are lined up. The girl cousins, like, man, they watch us on TV every week. And obviously, like, they ready for this. They want to do what they want to carry on the name, carry on the family business. So we legit going to be in this business 50 more years. It was like legit 100 years in this game.
That's crazy to think about.
Lined up, man.
You bring up cousins. I worked with Lance on Oahu on the Indies. That was my first, introduction to your family. Graves, looking at this, I have five generations. You mentioned generational. I have five generations right here just on the phone. You talk about kids and stuff. We're looking at 6-7 generations now at some point. It is baffling. Legit. Also, I was baffled when I found out Yokozuna wasn't, Japanese.
Same.
I just want to throw that one out there.
Same. We was like 10 years old watching them on TV. We was like, what?
What? What are you talking about? That was trippy to me. Still is.
People really believed he was. That's the first time I think I knew what a gimmick was. I was like, oh, that's a gimmick. But then in our business, everything's a gimmick, dog.
Was it weird growing up? I mean, obviously, you guys were football players initially. That was kind of your focus before, you caught the bug and realized that this is where you belong. Was it strange, or were you aware of it growing up as to how widespread this family business was? Or was it just, oh, that's what dad does. That's what pops does. That's how it was. It was just another day at the office.
It was that right there. We grew up talking about, like, people like, man, how's it feel like for your dad to be on TV and your dad and to be wrestling? And we just be like, I mean, it's cool, I guess. I mean, we grew up watching. And I watched my son respond the same way one day, man. Somebody asked him, man, yo, it's cool that your dad or your uncle's on TV, man. That's cool, man. How's it feel? He's like, I mean, it's cool, I guess. And I was like, man, I feel you. Because I feel you, man. Like, you grow up watching it. It's normal. It's so normal, bro. We had Bob Arum at the house. We would have, like, all these wrestlers just show up at the barbecues, man. I used to be like, damn, bro, they go Ultimate Warrior without the paint, bro. That's crazy. Shouts out to Ultimate Warrior, man.
Another missing piece I would be remiss to not mention of the bloodline has been the wise man, Paul Heyman. And Paul has been very open and honest in public about his connection to your family generationally. Yeah. Obviously, he goes back to the Wild Samoans. And when he broke into the business, what has Paul meant to the Usos' career? Because on screen, primarily, you see Paul as the special counsel to the tribal chief. Paul's more closely identified with Roman because he's always at Roman's side. But no doubt, Heyman's had a great effect on your guys' career. Talk to me about what Paul's meant to you guys.
Yeah, pulled us to the side, man. He pulled me and bro to the side. We just got on the road, right? I think it's the first time, very early. He was like, hey, I know you boys for a long time. You see that, Matt? I'm like, yeah. He's like, there's a lot of your family has spilled their blood and sweat and tears in that ring. When you get in that ring, you bump your ass off. You attack that mat. You bump harder than anybody in this business because it's in your blood. So you go in there, you bumping with your dad, you bumping with your uncles, with your cousins. So when you go in there, you attack that mat. That's your livelihood in there. That's your heart in there. And I was just like, I'm about to go bump right now, Paul. Thank you.
I'm gonna run through that wall right now.
Come on, man. Like he put it in us early, and I was like, oh hell yeah. Like you right. So man, I thank Paul for that conversation, man. Like, right before TV, you know how everybody get there and everybody's like in the ring, but he's like, hey, Usos, come over here right quick. And when he told us that, man, it's like, it stuck with me and bro. So when we get in that ring, man, that's why we leave it every night, man.
And it's like, we kept that part. Cause I think what he was trying to tell us, like, you know, as far as a working part, that'll open people's eyes. Like, yo, twins can get down in the ring. Like they're really good. You know, we get past that level. Now, you know, we start getting into this character stuff. You know what I'm saying? Usos is all like stacking, you know, bricks on top of it to build this big, this building of the Usos, man. The Uso crazy, Uso penitentiary, all that, man. And I don't think if it wasn't for Paul, man, like half of us, our family, wouldn't even know like how to move through this business if it wasn't for him, man. No.
I think it's important to tell this side of the story because, again, it's not just a TV persona. It's not just a wrestling storyline as to what Paul means to the three of you and your entire family. This is based in reality. This is about as real as anything you're going to see on any TV show across the board.
Every Friday, Paul feeding us, bro. Hey, don't catering's horrible.
Don't go to catering, new sales. I got steak
and shrimp. I'm like, hey, yeah,
keep him well fed.
Come on, man. He take care of him. There used to be this picture growing up, man. There was a picture of my dad, a young Kishi and a Samu with a young Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman had a big ass cell phone.
Cell phone. Oh, yeah. I remember being scared to death of the Samoan SWAT team when I was a kid. I had never seen, and then the head shrinkers, obviously, in WWE. Yeah. You know, those dudes horrified me, which I can only imagine because think about it like this. The Wild Samoans in their heyday, nobody ever saw anything like that. They might as well have been actual savage killing machines.
Aliens out there.
Yeah, because everything was so protected back then. You didn't have social media. You didn't know it. And they were in character all the time. So even years later, when I was a kid, I knew it was entertainment. But for I was sure. like, man, I don't know. These Samoan SWAT team dudes, they look like they could eat me. Like, I was horrified of those dudes. And then little did I know that all these years later, I'm like, wow.
Uncle Alpha used to carry that shrunken head.
The shrunken head, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
That used to be sitting around the house sometimes as a kid. It used to be just sitting there. I used to be like, man, that's crazy. Like, it would just sit. He had like three of them around the house, man. I was like, man, that looked crazy as hell, man.
Graves, you remember the head shrinkers when, you know, they'd come out and they'd be eating like chicken, you know, or like, and they'd be like eating it off the carcass. I was always like, what the is this? Like,
hey, that's real. that raw chicken is real, bro. We was watching that with moms. My dad did not want to bite that. He did not want to eat that.
I need you guys to back me up on this because I've entered new territory in my life. For the first time when I was in Hawaii, I had spam.
Oh, here we go with spam again.
Oh. Vic doesn't understand.
I've never had spam. No, I don't know. I don't know about it.
Man, Vic. Where you from, Vic? Where you
Cleveland.
From?
We don't do spam.
Oh, what the hell? Take your non-spam eating ass back to Cleveland, man. Leave it for us, bro.
I have never had spam in my life, and my mother, who listens to the show, messaged me, and she goes, I used to buy you spam for Christmas. So when did you ever buy me Spam for Christmas? She goes, Corey's right. You need to eat Spam. Yeah, I said, man, this is not my life right now.
What kind of childhood did you have that you got Spam for Christmas?
Well, speaking of, this is why I don't like Christmas, because I got Spam for Christmas.
You must have been a badass little kid,
man. Damn right I was. I'm still a badass dude right now. Speaking of Christmas, is that a Christmas tree behind you?
Hey, you damn right it's a Christmas tree. Bro,
it is May. Take that thing down.
Oh, man. Tis the year. Hey, my tree leaning a little bit.
Your tree's got a gangster lean to it.
Yeah, man. It's for the morale down here, bro. It's for the gaming area down here. No, good. Hey, Corey, you like Spam, huh?
I'm hooked on it, man. I'm hooked. Absolutely. Like, because now I know there's like, it's so versatile. You can do many different things with it. You could put
Are you still talking about Spam?
Hell yeah.
God bless.
I've been talking about Spam for 3 weeks now.
I know.
Because I got to get you to see it my way, man. The Usos know what's up. It's a good way to live.
I'm going to send some to your house, dog. Put that on a hot pan, dog. Get that crisp on the outside. Some rice and egg on it, dog. Come on, dog.
Spam, rice, and egg?
Yeah.
Spam looks like dog food to me. It doesn't look appealing.
Big, we ain't going to call you Oosh yet until you eat some Spam, dog. That's real talk.
You have to earn it.
Real talk. Your name, Vic.
Vic. Well, I guess I gotta eat some Spam then.
Oh, man.
It's all good, though.
Always love to hear from Jimmy and Jey Uso. They bring it in the squared circle, but also here on ATB. But you know what, Graves? If I have a prediction for 2023, my prediction is that the OC, who continue to roll and gain momentum on Monday Night Raw, may have their sights set. May have. Of course they have their sights set on Jimmy and Jey Uso and potentially getting a tag team championship match. And I'm talking about Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson. And what a pleasure it was to speak with Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson here on ATB. Yeah, of course we chatted about having a few beers, but much, much more, like coming to the aid of AJ Styles. Let's revisit the chat we had with Gallows and Anderson, the Good Brothers.
Guys, talk to me a little bit. I mean, the last time the WWE Universe saw you was the now infamous legendary Boneyard match where you guys were both disposed of at the hands of the Dead Man. Obviously, look, we got a little freedom here. It's a different era. We can talk honestly, openly. You guys were released from your WWE contracts.
Yep.
And I have to give credit to you for hitting the ground running. Because you two guys, I think, set a great example for a lot of people. I mean, look, it's nothing new in this business. You come here, you make it to the top of the mountain, and nobody gets to stay here that long. It's few and far between. You guys hit the ground running. You had a lot of your own projects. You mentioned the podcast. You guys even did your own sort of, would you want to consider it a pay-per-view online?
Yeah.
But you guys use your creativity and your love of this business, and you created something in your own vision. Talk to me a little bit about that and how refreshing that was for you guys to leave WWE and have that freedom, but also talk to me about the journey that led you back.
When I was really young, starting out in this business, probably around the time that Sterling James Keenan met Dorian Deville a long time ago in Orlando,
far away.
That's right. I remember I would always ask the veterans, like, what does it take to really make it in you know, pro wrestling, sports entertainment? And the best answer I ever got was a very simple one, and it was just don't take no for an answer. So sometimes in this business, a no creates a yes, and you have to take an opportunity or a missed opportunity and create another one. And, you know, Machine Gun and I have different career paths until we met at the end of 2013. He was in New Japan Pro Wrestling and had been there for 8 years, and it was very consecutive. I had bounced all around the business, different companies, TNA, Japan, WWE, even before coming back the last time. And I just knew that we couldn't fail. We believed in ourselves and we had to not fail. And I remember calling him the day, you know, they call him Black Friday sometimes in the business when the boys get released or whatever. And he wouldn't pick the phone up. And when he finally picked the phone up, he said, "What could you possibly want to talk about?" And I said, "Well, we're booked in Spain, Portugal, and somewhere else." This was before we knew the world would shut down. He goes, "How in the hell can you think about that right now?" I said, "That's what we're doing. And also we're doing a spoof pay-per-view in my backyard." And he hung up the phone. But that's how we got to where we were. And then he got on board and we were like, "Let's go out there. Let's kick ass. Let's make as much money as possible. And let's reinvigorate ourselves and prop the name and the brand up." I think a lot of people make the mistake of sitting home and feeling sorry for themselves, and you have to deal with it in your own way. But we just didn't believe in that, so we didn't do it. And we had a hell of a lot of fun. We won titles around the world and kept the train rolling and delivered the opportunity to bring us back to the spotlight. So I think it worked out great.
Carl, from your perspective, you're a guy, you've got LG on your side trying to make some inroads, trying to make things happen. But talk to me about like the human side of things. You've got a family to worry about. You've got bills to pay. I mean, both of you guys have you know, life expenses. And that's something I think gets lost on a lot of people. People, especially, you know, on the internet or certain groups of wrestling fans are so quick to judge, oh, I don't like this story. I don't like this character. This guy's moveset sucks. You lose track of the fact that at the end of the day, everybody's a human being. Talk to me about that uncertainty, Carl, because that, I mean, as a father, as somebody who's got bills and mouths to feed, that's always a fear in the back of everyone's mind.
100%. You know, I think what the good thing was is I'd been in New Japan for 8 years, right? So I'd supported my family that way before we even came to the WWE. And so I knew that it somehow, some way we'd be okay. But I do remember when the talent relations person called that day, I see a ring in my phone and I go, hello? I said, but you must be having a bad day and you want to hear a good voice, huh? Right? And he goes, well, it's not so good for you either. I go, huh? What? And then, you know, the guy calls Gallows too, and Gallows answers. He doesn't even know what's going on. He's outside mowing his lawn or something. And the guy goes, he goes, hey, what's up, man? And the guy goes, oh, I just got on the phone with your partner. And Gallows goes, why?
Oh, what's he up to?
Yeah, I don't think we've even told that story because it just came as a surprise to us. So I think that's what kind of threw me for a loop for about an hour, and then and after that first hour, which I think a lot of those things set people back for days. But after that first hour, me and Gallus had CBD oil, we had a beer, we had a wine
label,
we had an Impact Wrestling offer, we had New Japan on the phone, and all this stuff was rocking, and it was like, you know, by the end of the day, I'd almost forgotten what happened, or I'd almost used some of that to fuel what we were ready to rock with. And it ended up over the couple of years fueling me a little bit too much at times. I think I held some, just to keep it real. I held some
ill will,
some anger, but you know, I think that helped me in a lot of ways to do what we did for 2.5 years. And in other ways, like, it kind of took me to some weird areas. But I mean, at the end of the day, 2.5 years later, everything we did, we got a chance to go back to New Japan Pro Wrestling. We went to AEW for 9 months. We signed a 2-year deal with Impact Wrestling. I mean, and it all just ended at the right time. And then Triple H texts, and it's all this weird, you know. And I think at the end of it, I think when it comes down to it, in the years later, it could be one of the most surprising returns of all time, because I don't think anybody ever thought we would come back to WWE, and I didn't think we would either.
You got to remember though, like it's 11 days removed from this Boneyard match that we got all this praise for, that we were a part of, so we didn't see it coming. But in my mind, you know, where I think that it offended him, it offended me a little bit too. But I was like, we're 11 days out of main event WrestleMania. We ain't gonna be hurting for. Pardon my French, like, we're gonna go all over the world, right? We're gonna make a ton of money, and I'm gonna brand us as much as humanly possible, and I don't think we worried about that. And then by the end of year one outside, I go, dude, did you your tax return? Like, look at us, like, we're almost right where we were at, and that was always the goal.
And that's impressive, man.
The train kept on rolling. After being fired, I paid this big ass house that I bought off, and that's not to brag, but it's just like, we knew we couldn't stop.
It is inspirational though, Carl, isn't it? How you two rebounded. And when you look at life's journey as a whole, and you're going to, you know, Carl, sit with your kids one day having a beer and talking about your journey as a professional wrestler, as a person, how much will you be telling your kids about the relationship with Gallows and how you two are so different, yet you've got that telepathic chemistry in ring, but also how you help each other outside of the ring?
Yeah, no, the telepathic way is a good way of putting it. We met so many guys through the years that would always say, before me and LG even met each other, they were like, hey, have you, because I'd be, maybe I'd be in Tokyo in a room telling a story, and I remember MVP or a couple of different people would be like, hey, do you know Luke Gallows? And I go, no. And they go, oh, you guys would get along well. And I go, whatever. Forget him.
Little did you know.
We had both heard it. And then it was funny. I was in TNA at the time. He was in Japan, and he direct messaged me about something that he thought was funny on the show, and I thought it was funny on the show, and that was like the beginning of the relationship. And then my time was ending at TNA, and I give him a hey brother message. We've all done it. Hey brother, is there anything going on in New Japan? And that's how it all kind of came together. You know, he put the word in, and they saw me, and then we had like that stepbrothers moment where like we had a really cool match in Corrigan Hall, so we knew there was some chemistry there. And he goes, you like Mexican food? And I go, yeah. And he goes, do you like beer? And I go, yeah. And he goes, do you want to go with my sponsor to have Mexican food and beer? And I was like, yeah. And about an hour in, we were like, did we just become best friends?
You know, and it's, I'm glad we got canned together. We laughed a lot of times thinking like, what if LG would have got,
what if one had to stay? We would have been miserable.
No, but to go back to Corey, I didn't really answer your question. When we did get released, that first, like I said, that first hour, I kind of sat up on my porch outside, and I was thinking about, I thought about my kids a lot there, and I thought about like my wife and my family. I'm thinking, man, are they going to be embarrassed? And like, I know I started getting text messages from my neighbors, say, sorry about what just happened. And I'm going, oh, sakes.
How fast does that news spreads, man? It's scary.
So then I was thinking about going outside and shooting some hoops outside. I'm like, no, because they're all making fun of me. You know, I've been publicly fired. So there was a moment where I was like, you know, but I think down the road years later, now my kids will see, obviously be able to Google it all and see what happened and realize that their dad and his partner did take that setback and turn it around, you know.
And I know you guys stayed busy as a unit together, but Carl, correct me if I'm mistaken, you currently still hold a title for New Japan.
I am the New Japan Pro Wrestling never open weight champion, and Big LG is my heater at all times.
And that will continue until we see otherwise.
How does that work? How are you, do you have to go back, or are you...
I'm going to go back on my time when so New Japan Pro Wrestling usually strips their champions when they can't make a show, and they threw a leniency in there because they announced a match for me when we hadn't totally agreed on what we're going to do.
We didn't know the dates. So
the dates are coming up. This will be good to explain this. I'm going to come back and I'm going to defend my championship, but
on your terms,
just relax.
Give it a second, Brother Graves. Not you, the people that are really getting ogled. I've got some slanderous tweets. I've messaged Rocky Romero, who's a good, great friend of ours, who's one of the office brothers at New Japan Pro Wrestling. And I go,
he loves when you say that.
I said, I can't wait to announce this date because these people are just really, really hating me right now.
Really, really.
They're
upset.
Coming for your throat as New Japan loyalists, I know.
I'm keeping this title, never giving it back to
anybody. That's right. We're keeping it hostage in America. Damn it.
There we go.
This episode is brought to you by Maybelline New York. Get ready to bring the heat with Maybelline's newest lip plumping gloss, Lifter Plump. Fair warning though, it's hot. Like, literally. It's formulated with chili peppers to bring a heated sensation and an instant plumping effect that lasts. Available in 8 sizzling shades like Blush Blaze, Hot Honey, and more. Buy Lifter Plump now on Amazon and use the code 10PLUMP to get 10% off for a limited time. Tap the banner to learn more.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over 2 decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner, to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions, all apply. See website for details.
I want to get your thoughts as guys who have spent a significant amount of time in your careers in Japan. The announcement that was made last week that Nakamura is going to go to work for Noah with the Great Muta on the Great Muta's retirement tour. Like, how weird is that? And how weird is the timing of you guys coming back under the WWE umbrella as the same time that the world is sort of opening, you know, that you hear the term forbidden door. But when WWE, this is pretty unheard of. Do you guys have optimism? You think this is something that could be big going forward for the business?
This is so big. I don't think people understand the magnitude of how big this absolutely is. And I think that 6 months ago, this would have not been a scenario at all. I think it's huge. And Carl can speak even further onto it. But I mean, the fact that that's being allowed to take place is monumental in wrestling history, if you will. I think as longtime fans, we could probably, most of us agree, it's huge.
No, it's like I saw Shinsuke at NXT about a couple weeks ago, and even he pulls me aside and he goes, Chado, big problem. You New Japan big heat because of never title. Because even Shinsuke doesn't know.
Doesn't understand what's going on.
And yeah. Just for anybody listening, for the sake of anybody who may not be familiar, the Japanese as a culture do business very differently. And that includes the sports entertainment industry. And there are certain lines that you don't cross. And it's very different than it is here in the United States. And the brand that you work for, there's a loyalty goes very far. And there's a lot of separation over there as opposed to kind of a big business. So
yeah, which can also teeter into personal life where the boys can get mad at you thinking you're actually doing something and don't realize because they've kayfabe the boys. Yeah,
they do. Yes, they do kayfabe the boys.
No, but I told Shin, I said, yeah, I'm going to go back at some point. We're just trying to work out the dates because, you know, WWE is, man, you're live. What, you're live every Monday. You're live. You know, you got to go to Saudi Arabia. You got to do these, you know, Survivor Series is coming up. So you're trying to think of, you know, what days you can go. And it's, you know, with Japan, you're knocking out 4 days at least because you got to travel the day before, 2 days before to get there the day before to work the day of. Because if you leave the day before, you're not going to make the show the next day. It's 13 hours ahead.
And then maybe you have to get on a 6-hour train when you get there. So people don't understand, like just to get to the show is a day and a half sometimes before get anything on one of those, happens.
The bullet train.
There's ferry boats to Hokkaido.
Right, that's
easy.
Take me north, brother.
You need 4 or 5 days for this whole trip to happen. And then sometimes, you know, with the WWE schedule, it's not possible. But then Shinsuke told me, so before it was announced, Shinsuke goes, I'm going to wrestle, you know, Great Muta for his retirement. I said, wow. And it blew me away too. And I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. And I mean, this to be able, because, you know, WWE hasn't really done stuff like this. And
yeah,
this is pretty cool.
It's been a long time. And that's another thing that I think a lot of people seem to realize, and it's understandable. It's seemingly ancient history. We're all aging ourselves here. But you look back at, I believe it was WrestleMania 5, and you had Tenryu and Koji Kitao against Demolition. And whether it be Mexico or Japan, there have been forays out there where even Vince would say, hey, let's do a little business. Let's try to help everybody grow because, you know, the old adage, a rising tide rises all ships. But for one reason or another, business usually, it just never really worked out, particularly for any sort of tenure, no sort of, you know, time. So all of this is, when I read the news, I saw Shinsuke's tweet first that just said miracle. And I went, what is he talking about? And I said, oh my God, Muta, it's crazy to me. As a guy, I haven't spent nearly the time in Japan you guys have, but just as a fan, I'm getting a note that was WrestleMania 7. Thank you, Alex, for correcting me. But it seems almost hard to fathom. And now you guys are back on this side of the world under this umbrella. Is it exciting for you guys for the possibility of what could be?
100%. I mean, I think that it's cool too because you're kind of cross-pollinating audiences where WWE is so big and so broad, and we talk about demographics and the children and stuff like that. And then these hardcore, serious wrestling fans, like that are a big part of the internet community and all of that. There's like a cross pollination with the casual fan to these serious hardcore fans too. So I think it's going to be really cool from a fan perspective as well, because these are like, if any of them are possible, they're true dream matches that you can't see in these, you know, the big number one company, which makes it's phenomenal to use Uncle Alan as an example.
Yeah, I think through the years, WWE always took in this smarter fan community, they would take flack for not working with other people or not doing this or that. But being in the WWE system, the amount of time that we had been and seeing how busy the WWE is. I mean, it's hard to find time to do this other stuff.
Yeah, it's a machine.
Yeah, and if you want to be 100% honest too, right? Like, I think we even talked about this with New Japan. Like, anything WWE does with other companies is going to help the other company.
Yeah, it's a rub.
But that's just an obvious thing.
You can't listen
to Gallows and Anderson pontificate about this business and not grin from ear to ear. Always a good time with the Good Brothers, but from the Good Brothers to a godfather of sorts. Not the godfather, a godfather, one of the most important minds in the history of our industry, a man who stood toe-to-toe against WWE for the infamous Monday Night Wars, but would soon lend his contributions to World Wrestling Entertainment. Eric Bischoff joined ATB in April of 2022.
Obviously, in the years since you made that transition, you've carved out a Hall of Fame-worthy resume. I want to talk to you for a minute about the WWE Hall of Fame, which is going down in a matter of hours right now as we record this. The Undertaker, the headliner, the greatest sports entertainment character of all time?
No doubt. No doubt. And it's always hard. You know, I was asked that same question earlier in a radio interview, you know, of the three, I think it was Undertaker, Hulk Hogan, and Steve Austin, which is the biggest star? Well, you know, you got to qualify that stuff.
Right.
You know, I think if you look at the Undertaker, his impact on this industry, the longevity that he had.
That's most impressive. No one has a 30-year career in anything.
No.
Let alone something as physical and time-intensive as sports entertainment.
At the level that he played and the impact that he had, how do you not give him the nod for that role? Well, if you're just counting dollars, you're going to go to The Rock, because who's made more money in this industry than The Rock? But if you're going to talk about who had the most significant impact on the industry in the early stages of its amazing growth, how do you not pick out Hulk Hogan?
Agreed.
So it's a tough one, and it comes down to personal preference. And I think for me, when I look at, when I heard The Undertaker was going on, first of all, it wasn't a surprise, you know, to anybody that, you know, is aware of The Undertaker and his relationship with WWE. But I thought, man, this is going to be the coolest one. They're all cool. And I'll be honest with you, Corey, WrestleMania weekend is an amazing weekend. Everybody loves it for different reasons. Me personally, I've always loved the Hall of Fame portion of WrestleMania weekend the most, because the emotions are real, the respect, the fact that guys get up on that stage and they're being respected by their peers is a very special moment. I live vicariously through every one of them.
Would you think it's safe to say that it is one of the most real, authentic nights of the year in our business?
In its own way, I do. Because there's no storyline, man.
Yeah.
There's nobody's working hard for an outcome.
Right. Everybody, it's to me, it's a celebration of what you've done, and that's when it becomes real.
It does.
It's, you're not jockeying for position. You're not worried about what's next. It is kind of, okay, I did this thing, and here are my peers and the world acknowledging me on
the stage.
And
that's the magic. For me, again, everybody has their own different, you know, take on things. But even when you call me, when you and Eva called me last year, now I'm not going to lie to you, man. I kind of suspected, you know, perhaps, maybe. And even before that, years before that, every time WrestleMania would come along, people would, you know, my podcast or social media, whatever, are you going into the Hall of Fame this year? So I can never say I wasn't ever thinking about it. That would be untrue. But even when you call me, I kind of went, oh, they want me to do, this is unusual, but yeah, I'll do that. I wonder if, but when you said the words, when it went from, I wonder if, maybe when, to it's happening, if I allow myself to think about it too much right now in this moment, I'll start to get weepy again. That's how magic that moment was for me. And I don't think I'm unique in that respect.
Is it, it's a sense of validation? Like all
accomplishment.
The work. Accomplishment?
Yeah, validation, accomplishment. I guess it's the same thing. It's being recognized by your peers. I don't think you could be a driven professional and not desire that recognition from your peers.
Definitely.
I don't know how you do that. I couldn't do it.
I would agree with that for sure. For sure. Two other guys getting their recognition this year, Rick and Scott, the Steiners.
How obviously awesome is this?
Incredible. Shocking to many who if you know the behind the scenes and all the stuff that the internet's fascinated with, it seems a little more surprising than many inductees of days past. But Rick and Scott Steiner, absolutely belong in the WWE Hall of Fame for their contributions. You got to work closely with them more so than their time in WWE and in WCW. What are some of your favorite memories that are appropriate for public consumption of Rick and Scott Steiner?
Well, shortly after I joined WCW in 91, it might have been my very first pay-per-view, actually. I think it was Halloween Havoc at University of Tennessee in Chattanooga, I think. And I showed up. Everything was new to me, right? I didn't know any of the talent. Everything was new. Everything was exciting. You know, I was intimidated by most of it. And at that pay-per-view, we had to use the wrestling mat room where the amateur wrestling team practiced as our dressing area. Okay. And I show up and I find a corner back away from everybody because I was intimidated and just wanted to keep my head down, keep my job, not upset anybody, right? And I'm in there, you know, in the corner dressing and getting ready. And I look over and the Steiner brothers are torturing this referee. I mean, torturing him, stretching him, bending him, squeezing him, breaking him. And so they got tired of that and they wrapped him up like a mummy in gaff tape and left him in the corner. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, this is going to be fun. I can't wait to work with these two guys. That was my first impression of the Steiner brothers. And I subsequently, I went on to become really good friends with Rick. Rick and I took a very special hunting trip up to the Yukon, just south of the Arctic Circle one year.
Okay.
Had to fly in on float planes and do the whole thing. And we were up there for 10 days or 2 weeks and just amazing. But I've had a lot of great experiences with Rick. Scott, I didn't hang out so much personally.
Okay.
Scott was always
kind of doing his
own
thing.
Different.
Yeah. I think that's
kind of like hanging around with a hand grenade. You know, eventually it's eventually it's going to go bad.
Well, the list keeps on growing. I got to ask you about Vader, one of the most dominant physical specimens our business has ever seen. And dare I say, a guy who changed the game, physically speaking, for larger athletes and really raised the bar.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you can't argue when you, and you know, because of, you know, the nature of my podcast, Conrad Thompson and I, 83 weeks, we go back and we look at the history of sports entertainment and Nitro and WWE. We don't really talk about the current product much. But anytime we go back and we cover a Nitro or a pay-per-view, primarily WCW, where Vader was in a main event, I always get excited because you're going to go back and you're going to watch something that's 15, 20 or more years old, and you're going to see athleticism from a not just a big man, a very big man that is so off the charts, even by today's standards.
Right.
For someone that weighed 220 pounds, it's amazing to me. So I'm really glad that Vader's made it to the Hall.
Yeah, when they did the announcement of Vader's induction and just watching the few minutes worth of clips of him doing moonsaults, and it was such a dichotomy. He could get up on the top rope and do a moonsault and conversely throw somebody into the fourth row of the crowd. It made it seem effortless, but there was a believability about Vader that came through the screen. When I was growing up, I was terrified. When I saw him with the elephant helmet come out with the smoke in WCW, I was like, I don't know about this guy. I don't even know if Sting can stop this guy.
Right.
But I think it's very cool that he's finally getting his flowers, so to speak. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us here to live through it. So Vader will be taking his rightful place in the WWE Hall of Fame. I got to switch gears to another superstar that we recently lost, Scott Hall. Obviously a man who helped change the business alongside yourself, Kevin Nash, NWO, Hulk Hogan. What has, now that there have been a few weeks to process the loss of Scott, what has Scott meant to you in your personal life and your career?
That's a big one. I kind of look at my life as a spider web in a way.
Okay.
One thing always leads to something else, which leads to something else, and it seemingly doesn't stop. Scott Hall, you know, when he made his way down through the crowd on May 27th, 1996, I remember the day well.
Burned into your memory.
It's also my birthday.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Which is why I'm
thinking, and I was thinking about it a couple of days after I heard the news about Scott after he had passed, and I'm thinking, you know, the best birthday present I ever got was the day that Scott Hall walked down through that crowd. I didn't know it at the time, but the best birthday present I've ever received was that night. Because that moment, that night he came down through the crowd and he cut that promo, changed my life forever. It changed my son's life forever. It changed my daughter's life forever. It changed my wife's life forever. My grandson is going to enjoy a life in the future that benefits from that very moment that Scott Hall came through that crowd. And I'll never, ever not appreciate that.
That's wild to think of the magnitude that that moment had. When you put it like that, when you talk about the spider web and how everything's interconnected, if Scott Hall doesn't agree to come to WCW and then doesn't catch fire,
that story never happens.
It's hard to believe because it's such a massive part of sports entertainment history that you can't have discussions about how we got to where we are today without that piece of the puzzle. And looking back, we've all had our moments and reminisced about what Scott meant to us personally and what a mentor he was. But to hear it put the way you just did, I think puts a whole different light on the magnitude of a true industry changing moment. And Scott Hall was the first chip to fall into play.
He was the catalyst. He was the first domino to fall in a series of dominoes that changed not only my life, but to your point, the industry. Because so much of what really became the Attitude Era was a direct reaction to what was going on with the NWL.
Right.
It changed things and in ways that we're still seeing today and enjoying today. And it started with Scott Hall deciding to come to WCW. I think about this all the time. When I talk about being grateful, I really think through the things that I'm grateful for and make sure that I appreciate them the way I should. But Scott Hall never comes to WCW. That NWO storyline never happens. Hulk Hogan never turns heel. The Attitude Era may or may not have ever happened. None of us have a crystal ball, but I'm buying it.
Yeah, that's really, really wild. As much time, I think it's an example about just being so caught in the bubble and so close to it all the time. You have to take a step back and realize the magnitude of so many of these different
scenarios. Many things. You know, the NWO was one, and Scott Hall certainly, you know, was one, but there's so many other big moments. And I think it's one of the things that makes me really appreciate WWE and the universe and the history and the legacy, because had Vince McMahon not decided to exploit cable television at the time and in the manner in which he did, who knows if you and I would be sitting here right now.
That's very valid. You're absolutely right.
It's crazy to think about, but it's a healthy, fun thing to think about it as well.
When you look back on your career and all the contributions creatively or in front of the camera, behind the camera, obviously you get credited with the NWO and so much of the success of WCW. What are some of your favorite moments, Eric, as a man, that you just had the most fun doing, that you look fondly upon now, that maybe moments that don't get the love and aren't in the general zeitgeist of the mm-hmm. wrestling community?
There's a few, and they're unique. I think the first dollar of profit that WCW ever made, I had made a bet about 8 months earlier with the head of Turner Finance. And I told him, his name was Harry Anderson. And I was in a meeting with Harry Anderson and Bill Shaw, who was my boss at the mm-hmm. time. And Harry Anderson was really concerned about WCW and our budgets and where we were going. And I bet Harry Anderson, I said, I bet you, Harry, that we will be profitable by the end of this year. And he shook his head in a good-natured way, said, Eric, you know, I really appreciate your enthusiasm, but it's not going to happen. I said, I bet you. I'm going to bet you $1. And if I win, you're going to come to the Christmas party at the end of the year and you're going to get on your knees in front of the WCW employees and you're going to hand me that ceremonial first dollar. And we're taking pictures, Harry. And he laughed and he chuckled and Bill Shaw shook his head. He was embarrassed. Cut to that Christmas party in a little Mexican restaurant in downtown Atlanta at 2:00 in the afternoon, full of WCW employees and Harry Anderson, the head of Turner Finance, on his knees, handing me that dollar. That was a pretty cool moment.
That's excellent.
And I think as a performer, being the minister in the Chuck and Billy wedding,
yeah,
undoubtedly the most fun thing I've ever done on camera. So it's a toss-up between the two. Depends on my mood.
So, Eric, I know you, on your podcast, 83 Weeks, speak mostly about things that have occurred in the past, but you still keep your finger on the pulse of what's current today. A lot of superstars that speak out, I'm going to use Undertaker as an example because he's been in the internet media lately, mm-hmm. and anybody from the current generation or perhaps even the next generation seems to have that chip on their shoulder of, oh, well, that's the old timers talking. But there's a lot of validity and earned experience and the right to impart that information. When you look across the landscape now, what are some things that you would love to see more of and see less of, not only in WWE, but across the business as a whole? Without sounding like crotchety old man going, back in my day, we used to do this. Because I know that's never the intention. Guys are trying to impart wisdom, but this day and age.
You know what's funny, Corey, is I've heard that generational complaint since the day I came into the business when I was 31 years old. I was listening to Nick Bockwinkel and Vern Gagne complaining about the young stars that were coming through.
Right.
And how they'll never get it and they'll never draw a dime.
And conversely, simultaneously, the young stars are going, get out of my way. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to do it.
It's the same story. Yeah. These old guys are just hanging on too long.
Get out
of the
way.
These young guys don't know. They don't really understand the business. I've been hearing this argument. I've been in the industry or associated with it indirectly for a total of about 35 years. And I've been listening to the same story for exactly that long. You know, and the same thing was true in WCW. But I think what happens is people lose sight of what works, what has always worked. What's the one thing about sports entertainment that has always captivated people? And it's really hard to pinpoint one thing because it's different for everybody. Right. But I think across the boards, it's the story. Mm-hmm. And I would love if there was a way in today's environment and the sheer volume of things that needed to be produced, there could be perhaps more emphasis on story and less emphasis on the dynamic physical presentation. I think what's happened with the industry over the years, the last 15 in particular, maybe 20, is that the athleticism has, I mean, it's reached a point of being mind-boggling.
It really is.
It's just, I see things today that it's like watching Olympic quality gymnasts do things that seem to defy physics. And now we're seeing it within the context of a wrestling match. It's mind-boggling to me. But I think with the emphasis that's on the physical presentation, unintentionally, story and character have become de-emphasized. So I'd like to see that balance shift a little more than it currently is. But part of that is just me, because I've always loved the story. I've never been as excited about the physical presentation as I have been about the story presentation. But I may be in the minority on that one.
Well, I agree with you. I think the emotion is what supersedes everything, or should be, from my perspective. But as we're having this conversation and we're talking about how people consume things differently, there are still television shows that have the slow burn, the slow build, and you have to get invested in that. Yellowstone comes to mind.
I was going to say Yellowstone, 12 to 15 million viewers a week. You can't tell me good scripted, story-driven drama doesn't still work. Right,
but you still have the ability to binge watch it or watch at your own leisure, but that story still works. How, and this may be an impossible question to answer, but how could you find a happy medium where it's this business, it's this day and age where people want to consume things more quickly, but there's still that slow burn story. Where's the happy medium?
Mix it up a little bit. You know, you've got a lot of hours of television. You don't have to produce every single match and every single story with the same type of pace. You can have a slow burn story that takes 3 months to evolve over the course of a quarter while you've got other shorter form stories that are developing underneath. Okay. Or vice versa. You can have your short form stories up on top if that's what's moving the needle and still have that slow burn underneath. So you're satisfying both audiences. You're giving them the fast paced, visually dynamic presentation that people seem to be used to because of the way we consume entertainment. But underneath, you can still have a couple key stories that are slow burns.
KP, we are lucky enough to really get to pick the brains of a lot of superstars and people within this industry on this show. When it comes to conversation, to me, Eric Bischoff, second to none. I have learned so much from my limited interactions with Eazy-E over the years, and I always look forward to hearing more.
Yeah, absolutely. And always a pleasure when you get to see him pop up every now and then in around Monday Night Raw. But Graves, we're getting ready to wrap this thing up for another calendar year. Can you believe 2022 coming to an end? And here we go again. There's no stopping with WWE, is there?
Absolutely no stopping the machine that continues to soldier forward. And we are kicking off Monday Night Raw with a bang, KP. Two massive championship matches this coming Monday on Raw. The United States title on the line. Austin Theory versus Seth Rollins. The Raw Women's Championship. Bianca Belair defends against Alexa Bliss. And all the madness you have come to know and expect from Monday Night Raw. Happy New Year, KP. We made it through another one.
You too, pal. It's a pleasure working alongside you each and every week. And I'm learning so much next to the savior of misbehavior, Corey Graves. And I'm incredibly grateful for all that you offer. As I always say to you, you are an armadillo, my friend. Crunchy on the outside, soft on the inside. I'm always going to call you that now. But I appreciate you, man. Love to the family. And here's to a cracking new year.
Right back at you, KP. I cannot wait for the madness that will follow in the year 2023. I'm happy to have you by my side for the journey. Luckily for everybody listening, we will be back next week, bigger and badder than ever. I don't know how much different it's going to be, but you have to qualify it. It's a new year. You have to make it sound big, right, KP? That's what we do.
Damn right.
In the meantime, make sure you're following us at After the Bell WWE on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find me at WWE Graves. You can find KP at Kev_Egan. Make sure you're listening for free on Spotify. Just search After the Bell and hit the follow button so you never miss an episode. And we'll be back next week with more wisdom, more vitriol, and more WWE After the Bell.
This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com.